from the Radio Ranch in the heart of Liberty, Texas, that is. It's the Bombastic Blogcast for Wednesday, April 10th, 2024. I am the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
Hey there yourself, defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, and one heck of a nice guy. Let's get things officially started with...
The Daily Datagram.
You got it. Words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or noggin nuggets. You get to make the call. Good one here. It says, knowledge speaks, wisdom listens. Yeah. Journalists and politicians interrupt.
I request the cone of silence.
Let's move along now with the so-called educational part of the Big Blogcast.
Twisted History.
Let's do this.
Gather around, kids, because a lot of things happen on this day throughout history.
Big stuff.
Some cool, some not so cool. Just the same. You need to know your Twisted History.
Yes, you do.
You might be quizzed.
See? Well, kids, it was on this day in 1971. In an attempt to thaw relations with the United States, China hosted the U.S. table tennis team for a week-long visit. And it worked. For a little while. Now the only things ping-ponging between the U.S. and China these days is insults. And it was on this day in 1991, a rare tropical storm developed in the South Atlantic Ocean near Angola, the first to be documented by satellites. Today, many of those same satellites are watching what you're doing right now.
Let's face it, this is not the worst thing you've caught me doing.
You don't need to be a particularly gifted political analyst or political scientist to understand that Donald Trump's in the fight for his life in the courts. And now he's being thrown some curveballs. Actually, I don't think that's anything new. They've been throwing curveballs at him for as long as I can remember. But we have a federal prosecutor who just made a big confession about Trump that flipped the case upside down. See, it's funny that the left has been claiming for weeks now that Trump's political career has been characterized by obstruction of justice in a million different ways. Now, the radical Democrats tried impeaching him on phony obstruction of justice charges, and they tried impeaching him for allegedly trying to overturn the 2020 election with no tangible evidence to bring to the table. I have yet to hear anything that could be described as tangible evidence. But if you take a step back, you'll notice that Donald Trump is actually taking on the legal battles he's facing from indictment charges over the 2020 election, as well as alleged hush money paid to an adult film star ahead of the 2016 election with no ill will. He's not trying to drum up any illegal obstruction of the court systems and their processes during the cases. That doesn't much line up with the narrative from the left that Trump has tens of millions of radical followers who want to install him as dictator of America and all he has to do is say the word. Because that's what it sounds like when you listen to the left. And not only that, but so far the cases haven't been going the way the Trump haters would like. They're hoping Trump could be all but dead to rights by now as the presidential general election season heats up, shapes up. A surging Donald Trump getting a rematch against a vulnerable, and I do mean vulnerable, Joe Biden is really the last thing the Democrats want. And I still maintain that Biden is going to pull out. He's going to be forced out by the Democrat machine, by the deep state. He'll be forced out. There will be somebody else running in November against Donald Trump. I mean, if they really, really have any hopes of maintaining their power. So, when it comes to this rematch between Trump and Biden, unless there's something going on in the background that I really don't understand, and that's entirely possible, believe me, because I'm not particularly brilliant. I'm just an observer. I'm not a great analyst. I do not have a political science degree. And maybe that's to my benefit. I don't know. But when it comes to this Democrat fear of a rematch between Trump and Biden in November, that may very well be what they're going to get. According to the legal experts weighing in on the case against Donald Trump and how it may play out, you have multiple legal experts weighing in. And They gave their calculations on how it's all going to play out with the outlet, the Daily Caller News Foundation, DCNF. I love those people at Daily Caller. And simply put, Donald Trump may be in the clear, at least, on the classified documents criminal case that he's dealing with right now. Oh, they'll have other cases he'll have to deal with, and he will deal with them. Now, a former legal advisor for George Bush Sr. and George W. Bush, John Hsu, noted that the left is going after the federal judge for the case, not going their way because they absolutely hate Donald Trump. Not for any legitimate mishandling of the case on the part of the judge, Aileen Cannon. Oh, yeah. I really predicted that they were going to go after her. And now they are. But Hsu noted that Cannon is a high pedigree judge that has respect from everyone in the legal space, even those of a more liberal jurisprudence. Now, John Hsu shared with reporters, he says, most of the partisan left-wing criticism against Judge Cannon is not grounded in legal substance and instead is due to their personal dislike of the defendant, President Trump. Judge Cannon was very well regarded prior to her joining the bench, and a dozen Democrat senators, including staunch liberals like Dianne Feinstein and Pat Leahy, voted in favor of her confirmation. Well, backing up the claim that Cannon's proceeding with the case with proper handling of all the matters at hand and not favoring Donald Trump at all is a former federal prosecutor, William Shipley. Now, Shipley said that the case so far has been following a normal course without any processes being left out to favor either the prosecution or the defense, which doesn't line up with the left's claim that Donald Trump's getting a sweetheart treatment. So Shipley shared with the Daily Caller, says, what the advocates for the prosecution don't like is that such a procedure would likely not allow the prosecution to seek appellate review of any instructions they disagree with, which is normally not an option. Well, this hasn't stopped the left from trying to upend the case and tip the scales in their favor. According to a report from Politico last week, a former federal judge, Nancy Gertner, seemed to imply that Cannon should be removed from the case for supposedly favoring Donald Trump from the beginning. But naturally, there's no evidence of this. And if you demanded that they, over there on the left, supply evidence, they couldn't do it. There's no way they could do it. Another former federal prosecutor, Joseph Marino, weighed in on the case, saying that he sees no issues with the way everything's playing out. He said he found the left's complaining about Judge Cannon amusing. It's amusing to hear criticism of Judge Cannon as biased from the same people who seemingly have no issues with two elected Democrat judges handling Trump's civil and criminal cases in New York. That's a quote from Mr. Marino. And he's right on the money there. He also said, when you compare this with the fact that Democrat prosecutors sat on cases for years and are now moving heaven and earth to try them before the election, it shows that any pretense about separating the law from politics is now out the window. I mean, it's so very, very obvious. Now, Marino also dropped a bombshell that Trump's haters aren't going to like one bit. In Marino's estimation, there's no way that this case is able to be wrapped up before Americans go to the ballot box in November. He noted how complex the case is and how long these cases are normally going to take. And he specifically noted, any case involving classified evidence, which is governed by the Classified Information Procedures Act, necessarily takes time due to the difficulties and sensitivities around using such materials as evidence in a trial. Now, when I was in the Air Force from August of 68 through August of 72, my primary job, once I cleared tech school and got all my security clearances, was to protect classified documents. I was basically a librarian, a librarian overseeing a library of classified documents. And I had to follow certain security procedures. And anytime they wanted to have a classified briefing of top brass, Man, you wouldn't believe the preparations we had to go through to secure the auditorium. And this was back in the 60s. Can you imagine the eavesdropping devices that are available today? Can you imagine the shenanigans that security people, like I used to be, would have to go through today to secure an auditorium for classified briefings? So Marino says the complexity here is compounded by the fact that this involves a president with declassification authority and the unique application of the Presidential Records Act. Special Counsel Jack Smith, nonetheless, chose to prosecute this case and has nobody but himself to blame for how long it takes, which is an excellent point. See, that's definitely a wrench in the plans of the radical leftists hoping to have Donald Trump convicted before he appears at the top of the ballot for Americans to choose as our next president. Isn't it ironic who the real obstructors of justice are? If you've been watching the news, and I'm talking about the news that we favor, you know, like Fox News, they bring this up somewhat frequently. The United States has witnessed an unprecedented, and that's a word that I think gets overused, but in this particular case it applies, an unprecedented surge in migrant crossings at our southern border, with figures reaching almost 190,000 in February of this year alone. That is a lot of people. I think overall, nationwide, since this border of ours opened up with the inauguration of Joe Biden, we've seen somewhere, the estimates that I'm hearing is between 8 and 10, 11 million people just floating around the country right now, unaccounted for, illegally. Now, this influx, while a testament to the enduring appeal of the American dream, brings with it a less visible but equally significant threat. And I don't think enough people are concerned about this. I don't think anybody within the government seems to be really concerned about this. And this after we had a major lockdown due to COVID-19 a couple years ago. And what I'm talking about is the risk of infectious diseases entering the country. Some of them diseases we haven't seen here in many years. Now, historically, America has been a fortress against many, maybe most major diseases that have devastated other parts of the world, thanks to stringent public health measures and some pretty strong screening processes. But the current situation at the border marks a departure from the usual practices, leaving the nation at risk. I guess the word is vulnerable. Fellow by the name of Dr. Harvey Risch. He's a seasoned epidemiologist, and he's voiced concerns over the inadequate health screening of immigrants crossing into the United States. They are immigrants. They're also aliens, by the definition of the word. But they're all illegal. But just the same, Dr. Risch's warnings aren't unfounded. The lack of comprehensive health checks at the border stands in pretty stark contrast to the rigorous examinations once conducted at Ellis Island. Yeah, we're going to bring up Ellis Island. That's how my mom's family got into the country, through Ellis Island. And it was at Ellis Island where immigrants were very meticulously screened for contagious diseases before being allowed entry. And this method, this approach, ensured that only healthy individuals could get in, safeguarding the population from potential health crises. And think back, too, in those days, nasty diseases could catch on in epidemic proportions, and that's what they were afraid of. So the screening went on, whether the immigrant liked it or not. We didn't care if they liked it. They just did it. That was part of the condition of getting in. Now, you know Dr. Mark Siegel, right? That's the guy, that's the doctor, kindly looking gentleman that you see on the Fox News channel all the time. And he actually works for New York University's Langone Health Unit. And he highlighted the presence of diseases like tuberculosis, COVID-19, hepatitis A and B among migrants. And then you have internist Dr. James Hodges, who's pointed out the emergence of drug-resistant forms of tuberculosis. Now, that's particularly scary, and it's exacerbated by the open border policies. And these insights underscore the pressing need for a complete reassessment of health management strategies at the border to fend off these diseases and the transmission of these diseases. Now, the comparison with Ellis Island's stringent health checks is particularly poignant. You see, back then, doctors were vigilant for signs of contagious diseases like trachoma and tuberculosis, basically ensuring that anyone with questionable health was thoroughly examined. And this precedent illustrates a time when public health was paramount. It was very important. They talked about it commonly, guiding immigration policies to protect both the newcomers and the resident population. But today, the scenario is very different. And this is probably at a time where it should be anything but. You see, the absence of even basic health screenings, like temperature checks for most immigrants entering through the southern border, exposes a blatant vulnerability in the nation's defense against global pathogens. Think about it. As I'm speaking to you, we could very well be incubating a very nasty bug that would have the potential of spreading to the rest of the nation's population. And nobody's showing any concern. And this goes beyond the term oversight. It's a lot worse than oversight. It's complete ignorance of a problem. And it not only endangers the health of the American populace, but also strains the healthcare system, which now has to brace for potential outbreaks of diseases previously kept at bay. And the implications of this ignorance, yes, I'm just using a little different emphasis on the syllables. The word is ignorance, and that's exactly what it is. It is ignorance. The implications of this ignorance are very extensive. For decades, Americans have enjoyed relative immunity from many infectious diseases thanks to the country's isolation and advanced healthcare infrastructure. But the current laxity in border health protocols, I don't know if I should use the word could or definitely will, erode this advantage, exposing the population to infections against which they have little or no immunity. And addressing this issue requires a multifaceted approach, but I don't see anybody in our government doing so. You've got to strengthen health screening procedures at the border. You've got to. And you've got to bolster the healthcare system's capacity to manage and contain any major outbreaks. The potential is here right now. It just hasn't happened yet. We wake up every day to another day where we're just lucky. Consider yourself lucky. And there's a need for a balanced discourse that acknowledges the humanitarian aspects of migration while prioritizing public health and safety. You know, we're this is a cliched term. How many times have we heard this? The nation is at a crossroads, but it is. And the choice is between maintaining an open-door policy without adequate health safeguards, flirting with disaster, or reinstating stringent health checks to protect the nation's health security. I don't care if we offend these people as they're trying to get in. Bend over, spread your cheeks, grab your ankles, make way for the thermometer. We're going to poke you. We're going to prod you. You're going to have to be healthy, or you're going to go into quarantine. So yeah, it's fair to look back to Ellis Island and let those lessons from Ellis Island serve as a reminder of the importance of watching out for public health, especially in times of mass migration. You know, it's the political situation around the rest of the world that's the catalyst for this massive migration. And this massive migration is going to happen whether we like it or not. But we're not doing anything to make this massive migration secure. We're gutting our health system, we're gutting our economy, we're gutting our security. Crime is going to explode. There was an interesting story yesterday about how gun sales have gone through the roof. And the reason they've gone through the roof is because of the increase in crime. And so much of the crime that we're seeing as they're putting together the statistics, what kind of crime it is, shootings, who's committing the crime, illegal aliens. Well, John and Jane Q. Citizen are out buying guns for their own security because the leftist legal system in this country is just slapping criminals on the hand and letting them back out on the street. Thank you, George Soros, for all the fine work you've done in that regard, you bastard. So as the country navigates this health challenge now, the decisions made right now are going to shape the health landscape of tomorrow. Okay, may not be tomorrow, but maybe the day after tomorrow, maybe next week. So bear that in mind. And if you are the kind of a person who likes to write your congressman or your senator, you might want to approach this topic. Because right now, these people are flooding over our borders with no health checks. The nation's first outdoor test to limit global warming, you know, that phenomenon we're not sure is happening, by increasing cloud cover, launched a week ago Tuesday from the deck of a decommissioned aircraft carrier in San Francisco Bay, more specifically across the bay over there at Alameda, the old decommissioned Alameda Naval Air Station. Now, the experiment, which organizers didn't widely announce to avoid public backlash, I find that interesting, marks the acceleration of a contentious field of research known as solar radiation modification, and Bill Gates has been doing a lot of the funding of this. The concept involves shooting substances like aerosols into the sky to reflect sunlight away from Earth. Mad scientists? Oh, to be sure. The move, led by researchers at the University of Washington, has renewed questions about how to effectively and ethically study promising climate technologies that could also harm communities and ecosystems in unexpected ways. Now, the experiment is spraying, get this, microscopic salt particles into the air. And the secrecy surrounding its timing caught even some experts off guard. Sushi Talati, the executive director of the Alliance for Just Deliberation on Solar Geoengineering, which is a nonprofit that's aim is to include developing countries in decisions about solar modification, also known as geoengineering. Well, she says, since this experiment was kept under wraps until the test started, we're eager to see how public engagement is being planned and who'll be involved. And she's not involved in the experiment and only learned about it after being contacted by a reporter. So Ms. Talati added, while it complies with all current regulatory requirements, there's a clear need to examine what a strong regulatory framework must look like in a world where solar radiation modification experimentation is happening. Now, did you catch that a second ago when I said that part of the ingredients in this aerosol are salt particles? Now, has anybody given a moment's thought to the damage that salt particles do to metallic objects? All metallic objects? If you don't know what I'm referring to, why don't you go and visit places like Cleveland, Ohio? That's a good place. That's a town I know a lot about. Go visit Cleveland, Ohio, and look at the automobiles around you. You can see cars that are only 3, 4, 5 years old, and they are rusted, especially around the wheel wells and around the door jams. They're rusted beyond repair. Well, this is because all winter long, these cars are driving on salt that's put down on the streets to melt the ice and snow. I'll never forget my father's 1960 Mercury that he bought new. And by mid-1962, this is a car he took delivery on St. Patrick's Day of 1960. And in just a little more than 2 years, the rear fender wells had rusted completely through. But never mind. These are high-minded scientists who know more about what's good for us than you and I do. Now, the Coastal Atmospheric Aerosol Research and Engagement, or CARE, project is using specially built sprayers to shoot trillions of sea salt particles into the sky in an effort to increase the density and reflective capacity of marine clouds. Never mind that there's this thing called gravity that would suck these particles back down to Earth. Now, the experiment's taking place, when conditions permit, atop the USS Hornet Sea, Air, and Space Museum in Alameda, California. It's going to run through the end of May, according to a weather modification form that the team filed with federal regulators. I find it interesting, though, that we now have a couple of states, Tennessee and Minnesota are two of them, who have already enacted legislation that would prohibit this kind of experimentation in their states. Tennessee and Minnesota, and there's a third state, I forget which one, but I find this very interesting. Anyhow, the project comes as global heat supposedly continues to obliterate monthly and yearly temperature records, according to their documentation. And amid growing interest in solar radiation modification from Silicon Valley funders and some environmental groups. Again, chief among them is Bill Gates, who is shelling out unbelievable sums of money to feed this so-called research. You know, this to me smacks of the kind of a thing that we used to see in those old Boris Karloff movies, you know, the mad scientist who's going to destroy the world through experimentation. Well, here you are, my friend. Off to the comedy corner with Jesse Egan.
I don't know. I'm trying to figure out what women want, you know. I think they want a man with a truck and a horse. And a dog the size of a horse that drives trucks. I don't know what they want. I really have no idea. I just rescued a kitten, so if you're looking for a tough guy, his name is Sir Meows-a-Lot. I call him Meowsy, and he's very sweet. I spoil him, you know. At one point, he had like 3 different litter boxes, which is pretty unnecessary because he always goes to the bathroom in the exact same houseplant, so didn't really need to do that, but thinking about putting a picture of him on my dating profile, you know? I don't look like this online. You know, nobody does. I look like a Pitt Clooney hybrid, you know? I went out with one girl. I didn't look like me. She didn't look like her. I was like, hey, we catfished each other. How about that? Pretty sweet. So we went out for fondue. That's what we did. I don't know if anyone's done that. Anybody been to fondue here? It is really expensive is what it is. Yeah, we're like $200 in. I was just like, can we just get a third shrimp, please? The waiter's like, would you like to try dessert? I was like, yeah, let me go sell my smart car. I'll be right back. Sample those strawberries. Okay. Insufficient fondue is what I call that meal. Fun don't have the cheddar for that cheese, you know what I mean? I'm pretty broke. I really am, you know. I do most of my shopping at the 99 cent store, so, you know, yeah, it's a weird thing to cheer for, but I do. I buy everything there. I bought some scented candles there, made my whole house smell, you know, like the 99 cent store, just moldy and defective. They had other scents, too. They had expired and lead and made in China. That one's exotic. I'm going to go back, collect the whole set, you know. But you know, I did dress up for you guys tonight. This is my least stained outfit, so you're welcome. You know? I really want to do one of those red carpet interviews one day, you know, where they're like, with the celebrities, like, who are you wearing? Who's your designer? I'd be like, oh, I think his name is Ross. I got it at Ross. I like to dress for less. Now, I mean, these are Tom's shoes, not the brand. I stole them from my buddy Tom, and actually got this shirt back when I was in the Army. Thank you. You're right not to applaud. Not a hero. It was the Salvation Army. And Took it from their lost and found sack. So
make it a wonderful Wednesday. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on tomorrow's Bombastic Blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And you be sure to take some time today just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?
See you tomorrow, G-Man.